You're listening to the Girl Banker Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bartholomew. Your marketing should reflect your bank's values and mission. How are you communicating your brand to your customers? Whether it's a rebrand, a new B2B strategy, or a social media calendar, the Twiggs Group can provide your marketing team with guidance, inspiration, and creative support for your bank marketing strategy. Go visit welovecommunitybanks.com today. Calling all girl bankers. Are you a woman in banking? Check out the Girl Banker Facebook group where you can join hundreds of women in banking from around the country in sharing best practices, motivation, ideas, and much more. This is a fantastic community for all girl bankers out there. So join in today. Just search the Girl Banker group on Facebook, complete the questions, make sure that you're a woman in banking, and join the conversation. I'll see you there. Welcome back to the Girl Banker Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bartholomew, and today I have such a treat for you guys. I have Casey Christopher, Chief Empowerment Officer at Quantic Bank. Casey, welcome to the Girl Banker Podcast.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here.
I appreciate your patience getting you on here. I had to cancel on you and we had to delay a little bit. Why don't you tell our listeners about your recent experience with COVID-19?
Let's just jump right in. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm glad you asked about it. When you and I first spoke about doing this podcast, I was actually, I think it was like day 13 of my COVID positive diagnosis, and I asked you to push it out as far as we could because I didn't know how I was going to feel, you know, out from, well, soon thereafter COVID, and then also the lingering effects because I had read so much about how I might feel a month later. So yeah, just like a lot of people we know, I took all the precautions. I followed all the CDC guidelines, haven't eaten inside, haven't gone to a grocery store, washed my hands to the point that they have like the little, you know, like looks like little paper cuts from washing them so much. And I tested positive for COVID. Yeah, fortunately for everybody that's listening, I'm good, mild case, thank goodness. Happy to share any insights. If anyone unfortunately tests positive, wants to reach out to me on LinkedIn or anything like that, I can let you know, get your oximeter, get your thermometer. If you're a banker, you like to look at data. So I checked my oxygen every hour on the hour to make sure I was good. Yeah. So it really was a harrowing experience, but made it through. And I actually feel great. I get tired a lot faster, but not to the point that I'm like concerned about it. But I also haven't done a whole lot lately. So like, it's not like I can compare it to being in an airport for, you know, 2 out of 3 days traveling all over the United States like I used to. It's pretty much like to the, you know, pizza place and back kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, it is fascinating to think about this year compared to last year. And of course, you have a whole other element of complication given that you are a coronavirus survivor. But just imagine, I mean, the miles that we were putting on in the skies or on the ground in 2019 in comparison to 2020.
Absolutely. And I actually moved from Florida to New Jersey in 2017, which I know who moves from Florida to New Jersey. I get it. It's not exactly the direction most people move, but I was working half in Florida and half in the Northeast in 2017 and 2018. So I was on planes constantly and actually a lot of trains and subways too to catch the Acela to DC because I was heading to DC as well. And Acela is the high speed train from New York City to DC, which I highly recommend if anybody has the opportunity. So all that time, I absolutely love traveling and stayed healthy. And then I stay in my home and, you know, go to the local park and get COVID. So, I don't know.
Well, I'm so glad that you've recovered and we're able to get you scheduled and get this recorded today, because I really feel like what we have to talk about today with your new role as the Chief Empowerment Officer, I think there's going to be a lot of bankers, really anybody in business, that's right. A trigger word right now, the word empowerment. I think they're going to think this is this is interesting. And they may be reaching out to you to try to create their own role like that in their organizations.
Absolutely. And I want to say it right now, Casey Christopher, C-A-S-E-Y, Christopher, just like the boy's name on LinkedIn, please reach out to me, message me. I never say no to a phone call or a Zoom coffee or anything like that. So all of a sudden those alerts are just going to start going off on my phone. It's been
No, you go for it.
Yeah. It's been an interesting ride. You know, kind of to, from my start in banking to where I am right now, cause I've been in banking for 18 years now, which sounds a lot longer when I say it than how I feel, because I feel like everything is so new and exciting. Like I just started doing this. I actually, out of college, wanted to be a wedding planner and got a job as a wedding planner. I kid you not. That was
you actually were a wedding planner.
I actually was. And let me tell you, it's not what it's cracked up to be.
That is fascinating to me because I always had a dream of owning like a wedding, like a dress shop. And helping guys kind of doing an all-inclusive setup for them. But I don't think that, and especially with the expectations that weddings have these days, coronavirus,
outside of the COVID scenario,
it's at a whole new level. I don't think I could handle that. I don't think I could handle the bridezillas.
No, and it took me a very short amount of time to understand that that was not the industry for me. And I used my office at this little like venue in Columbus, Ohio, because I went to college in Southern Ohio. I used to look out the window at a bank branch like all day long. That's what I looked at. And I used to notice that the people like came in at 9 a.m. with their bag lunch and like left at like 4 or 5 p.m. And I was like, you know what? That's the job I want. Why am I sitting in here with these bridezillas? So I actually marched downstairs and went into the bank branch and was like, I'm here to work for you. I need a job at a bank. And I didn't get a job at that bank, but I got a job at one of the really, really big, you know, top three banks. And that started my banking career. And then I moved up to Cleveland to work for another big bank. It was National City Bank, which actually doesn't exist anymore. It's part of PNC now. And then National City Bank moved me to Florida. And 6 months later, they were acquired. They failed, actually, and were acquired by PNC. And PNC said, okay, well, you can come back to Cleveland, Ohio, or you can move over to Fort Lauderdale, because I lived in Tampa at the time. And of course, like any good girl banker, I hung up the phone and called my mom and was like, what should I do? And she said, hold on, I have to pay the snowplow guy. And I was like, I'm staying in Florida for a little bit longer. I'm not coming back to Cleveland. So I ended up staying. I didn't stay with PNC, but I saw a job on Monster.com. If you guys remember Monster, I don't even know if it's around anymore, but I saw a job. I know it's like it morphed into Indeed or something probably, but I saw this job and it was a banking job in correspondent banking. And I actually at the time didn't really know what correspondent banking did, which correspondent banking is bank to bank banking. And I found the hiring manager's name and number, and I called his direct line, and I said, and I left a message, and I said, hi, I'm Casey Christopher. I'm your new business development officer for Silverton Bank. Like, I already had the job.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he was like, what is this crazy lady? So he ended up calling me back. Basically, he told me, I mean, we're still friends to this day. If anyone knows Brett Rawls at Center State Bank, he's amazing. And he called me back and he told me that it was because he was so intrigued by like, who does that?
Now, so, that's some confidence. That's
I don't know where it came from, Natalie.
Yeah. Did you kind of come up with that on your own or did you learn that technique from somebody?
No, that is original Casey. I don't know where that came from. I didn't learn it from anyone. And he called me back and he ended up hiring me. And then unfortunately, Silverton failed too, which that was the Bankers Bank of Georgia. That was they renamed it that. And then a group of us started the correspondent division at Center State Bank in 2009, which Center State's based in Winter Haven, Florida. So I love Center State, love correspondent banking, but that's how I got into correspondent banking. And then my parents moved to New Jersey, which they have similar strange moving styles. They retired to New Jersey because that's where our family is originally from. So I decided that it was probably a good time in 2017 to kind of just rip the Band-Aid off a little bit and leave Florida, because I knew I'd never leave if I stayed any longer, and move back. Had the opportunity to meet Patrick and Steve at Quantic Bank. They were customers of mine at Center State, and really thought that their approach and their mindset to community banking was incredible, was unique, and it happened to be right in line with a lot of things that I had been thinking for years. And I just, nobody seemed to listen, and wow, they listened. So one of the things I said to them, because I had been sales for so long, when we met, was, you're one of the first groups that is interested in what I'm thinking, not who I know. And that was really impactful for me to realize that, and for them to confirm that.
You know, that's really empowerment right there, right?
Right. And, you know, the mission statement, the Quantic's mission statement that existed before I joined, was break the system for financial empowerment. So empowerment has been in Quantic's DNA from day one, from when Patrick and Steve collaborated on this. So I think the overarching mindset and theme that they run as leaders and building this culture, I got to see really early on because I met them 2 years, about a year before I joined Quantic. So I had been kind of following them and understanding what they were building for a year before I got to be a part of it. And every time we would meet, every time we would talk about stuff, I would think like, oh, you know, is this for real? Are they really this progressive and really this unique on rethinking how this community bank is going to be different up here? Because we think that we have the belief that the financial system is largely set up for one size fits all for products and for culture and for employees. And as a community development financial institution, we have a unique opportunity to do non-QM mortgages. So we cater to immigrants, low-income folks, and also gig economy workers. And we're able to do that because of our CDFI designation. So there's just some really unique ingredients that make up the recipe of Quantic.
Yeah. So how many employees do you have?
Oh my gosh. We were going to cross 200, but I think we're at 199. Throughout COVID, actually, we have an interesting story. Since March 1, we have hired 129 new employees. So So our mortgage division is doing an amazing job, and we have added 25 new states to where our employees live in. So we've really embraced the work from home culture. And early on, let's say probably in May, we decided that we were interested in the talent, not the geographic place that they resided. So if you live in Arkansas and are the best full stack developer there is, we would love to talk to you. And we felt like we were really limiting ourselves by just hiring in the New York metro area and having people commute. And really, when you think about it, the New York metro area is really hard to live in anyway, in terms of cost. And I live really close to New York City. I live in a commuter part of New Jersey, and it would take me a little bit over an hour and a half to get to Quantic's headquarters. That's by two trains and a subway. Two subways and two trains just to get there.
Wow. And if you added that up on a daily basis or a weekly basis, and then subtract that from likely the productivity that you have from not having to make that commute, I mean, that's substantial. That makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference in productivity, and it makes a huge difference in quality of life too. So, I mean, I can't even imagine, I don't have children, but the fact that of being able to get your children off the bus. Not that there's buses right now, but, you know, being able to be home with your children that are have to have school from home and stuff. I mean, it's a whole new thing that all of our employees and your employees and everyone around the globe really is grappling with. But one of the things in the chief empowerment role was to really listen to our employees and listen to what they need right now. You know, mm-hmm. what can we do for you to make what's happening in your life easier? How can we allow you to grow, thrive, and flourish even with what's going on around you? And that's been a really wonderful experience to reach out to employees that have never worked at a place where their voice was really heard. It might have mm-hmm. seemed like it was heard, but when I'm setting up one-on-ones and saying, hey, can we have a quick coffee? Can you tell me what we can do better? Can you tell me what you're comfortable with telling me about in your life that Quantic can make that better? Do you need more, you know, flexible hours? I mean, something as simple. I recently did this. I was talking to an employee that mentioned basically just kind of like how their eyes hurt. They tried those blue light glasses and stuff. And I said, well, what kind of screen are you looking at? And it was simply their laptop screen. And we shipped her two of like the giant monitors to see if that would help, which fortunately it did. But she would have never proactively asked had I not had that one-on-one and just, you know, simply picked up on that she was rubbing her eyes and stuff like that, looking at the screen.
Wow.
So how simple is that, though, Dolly? And inexpensive.
It's not rocket science, but so
effective. It's just asking, what can we do for you? What are the little things that we can do for you? Now, we've done big things, too. Like, I will toot my own horn, or toot Quantic's horn a little bit. I am a big proponent of paid parental leave. And I spearheaded that when I was at Center State. And then also when I came here, I felt like our policy wasn't up to par, and we were able to transform it into not just paid maternity leave for 12 weeks, fully paid, but parental. So both moms and dads have 12 weeks paid leave here at Quantic.
Wow. Those kinds of initiatives are life-changing for people. I mean, that's not just, let's check this policy off so that we can say that we have it. That literally can be life-changing for some employees.
When I go, I want to go big, Natalie.
Right? You better go home, right?
No, but the thing is, what really struck Patrick, Steve, and I when we were talking about it was, when we started talking about it, it didn't seem a mountain we couldn't cross. It was like, okay, how do we make this work? And why is it so important? And when we really talked it through and realized how it would attract and retain great employees, it just really seemed like a no-brainer after we did a little bit more research. We were able to fit it in. And the fact that we felt like it could change people's lives too, and it wasn't a big mountain for us to cross. We were so excited that it was something we could roll out.
So let's talk about kind of your day-to-day, your ultimate job description as the chief empowerment officer, because I think that community banks are always steered towards, you know, tangible numbers so that they can mm-hmm. see an ROI for a specific right. investment. So let's say with an employee or creating this role like this, it kind of challenges the status quo that community banks typically have in regards to thinking outside the box and going, this is not something that you're going to immediately see a tangible ROI. You're not going to be able to run a report to see, you know, it's long-term effects. It's employee retention. You know, eventually those things do have numbers that can right. add up and really prove your sure. point, but sometimes that takes time. So talk to us about how this job role came into play. Mm-hmm. I assume it wasn't already in place. Was this kind of created and then here you are and you were granted this role?
Well, kind of. I will say, because you're absolutely right about the ROI, I do have key performance indicators. So as a banker, I was actually the one that was like, what does success look like? What does success look like in 30, 60, 90 days? How do we measure that? Because it's the folks around me were willing to kind of be a little bit more lax on what is this role and what does it bring to the table and how do we measure it? But I needed to see that. So kind of like back to my comment on my oximeter for COVID, where I have to see the data. I had to do that almost for myself. So I do have a pretty extensive list of key performance indicators that I measure myself on. But yes, your point is exactly right. It is a less tangible role than, you know, a chief lending officer or chief administrative officer, operating officer, where you can really measure things easily, run a report, as you say. So what we thought about was our culture and how our culture means everything to us and how our culture drives innovation, how our culture drives how we look at innovative deposits and adaptive lending, and how it trickles down from the culture. So we really wanted to make sure we cultivated that. And Patrick Sells, our CIO, has really embraced or built and cultivated the culture. And then it's really my job to carry it on and to work a little bit more, more closely with our employees to make sure that they're heard, to make sure that they feel supported and that they feel challenged too. You know, we're going to roll out a piece on education, getting certificates, getting certified, getting continuing it, anything to grow our employees' knowledge base.
So when you have interviewed an employee or had a one-on-one or had your Zoom coffee and you've learned of challenges they're facing, and like, what are your action steps? I mean, I would assume that are you the only one in this role? Do you have like a team that helps you with it? Do you have an assistant or sure. Is it solely up to you to kind of find these solutions to bring back to these employees?
It's just up to me right now, but I would say our whole team is a team, meaning the 198 of us are there to help out in terms of, you know, if somebody has an expertise and I don't want to, you know, my role, I'm excited about the part where I get to really help with those one-on-ones, but there's also a like more global aspect too. So I think that we as a team approach some of the bigger culture steps forward.
I mean, my perspective on what you were doing is small-minded, because the key factor here of what you're doing and the key factor to the success of this kind of role and overall success to the employees that are benefiting from it is the fact that you've got the buy-in from the top down, that it's already ingrained into the culture of your bank. As opposed to, hey, this is something that we need to be put in place. Here's your job. Figure it out. Go for it. Put it in place. It was already ingrained in your culture.
It was in our DNA.
I think that's got to be a huge piece to the overall success of what you're doing with empowerment within your organization.
Absolutely. The foundation was already laid. We think that if we give our employees the tools to cultivate, participate, and initiate in change, that's, you know, having the one-on-one and asking for the monitors or the paid parental leave and things like that, that if we can empower them to participate with us, mm-hmm. we can empower our customers too. So it's all one big ecosystem of doing good, really.
Right. So what have been some of the immediate impacts of what you're doing? What are you seeing happen with your employees already?
Sure. So this is a brand new role. So it's still evolving. But I would say, I mean, the biggest win is definitely paid parental leave. That rolled out right after my announcement. And then also we've got some changes in benefits that I think will be really exciting for our employees. And then the education piece, but I also think just knowing that there's a role called Chief Empowerment Officer at the community bank they work at, and mm-hmm. that I am during their first week, we have something called Culture Day when we're onboarding them. And I participate in Culture Day and tell them that my entire role is to listen to them and to garner feedback and to empower them. And I get emails and calls and text messages all the time from new employees and existing employees that just have a really good idea and want to talk about doing a steps challenge or want to talk about doing a trivia night or some sort of engagement. So we've been able to really ramp that up fast since starting.
Yeah. And I would think that in a time where, well, already you've got your employees spread out all over the place, working right. remotely, and employee engagement and keeping morale high is certainly a higher challenge than normal. I mean, or a larger challenge in terms of you can't necessarily see them face to face or be able to read their body language immediately to know how things are going. You've got to put in the extra effort of reaching out to them electronically or paying attention yes. to what they're doing via Zoom. And that's just a whole other layer of complication. So that's a huge step and a lot of, I'm sure it's a big challenge for you.
Well, yes. And we have four core values that are really unique. And we talk about them every day, multiple times a day. I will say these four things. What our first core value is say cheese, which is be positive, smile, and encourage others. You know, when you take a picture, you smile and the photographer smiles. We have try it on, which is be adaptive and open to new ideas, unafraid to embrace change. So the way we explain that one is if you're at Macy's and you're going to try on a dress, you don't make like a spreadsheet, pros and cons. You just grab the dress and try it on. So, you know, working at banks, I think there's analysis paralysis at some of the banks.
Yes.
So we're very big on just try it on. The know the goal is our third one, which is be intentional, understand what the outcome is. So before our Zoom calls, our meetings and stuff, we in the invite, we know what the goal of the call is, and then we'll reiterate what the goal of the call is. We'll also start with a positive focus. So we'll all go around the room and say something positive that's happening in our life, which is really fun. But we have a fourth core value, which is the hardest one for me. And it's one I struggle with, no joke, on a daily basis. And it's progress, not perfection. And it is progress that is what matters. Don't let the desire for perfection prevent progress. Now, come on. We've been bankers. I mean, I've been banking for 18 years. It's perfection. Perfection is asked of you. Or I still feel it to an extent, but I felt, you know, you can't just debit or credit like $1 million-ish dollars. You have to be perfect on what you're doing. So that one was tough for me until, you know, my fellow executive explained to me, like, yes, we have to be perfect in that sense. But in terms of just trying something, so try it on and progress, not perfection, go really hand in hand. And my career has been spreadsheets and white papers and studies on why we're going to do something, when we're going to roll it out. And then that takes about a year before we actually roll something out. And I get it. I get why we did all the analysis. At Quantic, if you have an idea and it's a good idea and we can kind of understand it real fast, something that used to take a year someplace else will take 3 weeks at Quantic. So progress, not perfection, is a really liberating, and I'll use the word empowering, core value to have at the bank, to understand that you don't have to be perfect in anything that you're doing. If that's personally, if that's professionally, if that's in your job, you just have to move the ball forward every day.
Do you feel that taking that approach with the try it on, and I'm loving the dress at Macy's reference and filling out a spreadsheet. I may or may not have once created a spreadsheet, a packing spreadsheet for when I went to banking school. I did have
a spreadsheet. Wait, let me just stop you. I have a laminated packing spreadsheet that I use dry erase on.
That is fantastic. That's a great idea. That's a great idea. But to backtrack, so the idea of acting quickly instead of just messing with it to the point of where you hate the project, basically, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you feel that that quick moving mentality has helped to salvage creativity within your team? Do you feel that people are more likely to be creative and stay
motivated? Yes, oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. I feel that the absence of fear that we're going to fail garners innovation. And I feel like I personally feel empowered to bring up ideas that I might not have in the past, because I would think, oh, maybe this the way we do things here means I have to bring this through this committee and it has to funnel through this and it might take 2 years. But the fact that you can watch things around you get done so rapidly fosters a lot of creativity and innovation. For sure. And then we also, on the business side, because I feel like I don't want people to be like, oh, this is like a willy-nilly bank that's just doing bad stuff. We look at contracts and partners a little bit differently than I have in the past. We would rather be in a short-term contract and pay a premium for that short-term contract. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to, you know, you're going to get a break if you sign up for 2 years, but you're going to pay a little bit more if you sign up for 6, 9, you know, a year. We'd rather pay the premium and do the short time and understand, you know, let's roll this out. Let's see what our either employees or customers, depending on what it is, think of this product and then, or service. And if it doesn't work. And it's been 6 months, we're out of our contract. So that part of try it on and progress, not perfection, is really exciting as well.
So what Enneagram are you? Have you taken the Enneagram test?
ENTJ? Is that the wrong one?
I think that's Myers-Briggs, maybe.
That's Myers-Briggs. I'm like the general or whatever.
Yeah, Enneagram, like, for example, I'm a 3. So when you were talking about the progress versus perfection, an Enneagram 3 would have a really hard time settling for progress over perfection. But they ultimately would be more productive and happier if they could grasp that concept. So I think it's interesting to know if there's a listener out there going, you know what, our bank could really benefit from this type of role or having an initiative that focuses on empowerment in general. You know, what kind of employees would I need to find to be able to run this or make it effective? I think it would be helpful for them to know your personality. I mean, I can already tell we would be great friends if we got to hang out more often.
Well, let's do that. Actually, we have something in common. I mean, we have a lot of things in common, but I did hear on your last podcast with Kate Swika that you spoke at your high school graduation.
Yeah, yes.
And I, too, was a featured speaker at my high school graduation. Well, shout out to Chagrin Falls Tigers right there.
There you go. I mean, you know, I think we should have our own special club for that.
That's awesome. I do need to find out what color and what number I am. I do need to do that. I know I'm an ENTJ for the Myers-Briggs, but
yeah, you would. And I may be wrong on. I need my friend, my coworker Jackie, in here to help explain that. She is like the personality assessment guru. So shout out to her because she knows all those things. But that may be a fun thing for you to do with your team. I really feel like you're probably. If I was to guess, I'm going to guess that you're a 3. So you're going to have to follow up and let us know.
I'm writing that down. Okay. Well, I guess it is preserved on the podcast. So we
okay. That's your challenge. But aside from personality tests or assessments, that seems to be a common theme on this podcast. We talk about it a lot. But tell us about the type of qualities or maybe some of the skill sets that you've acquired in your career that are setting you up to be successful with this particular role. Because I think that, like I said, I think that there's going to be some bankers out there going, okay, I've got somebody in mind, or I'm thinking this role would be really good. What kind of steps do they need to put in place to implement something like this in their own bank?
Sure. These are hard questions for me. Like, I can talk about my role, but like talking about me and stuff, that's a little bit harder. But I do want to share something that I think was the foundation of what has led me to where I am today. And I started it probably, let's say, 12 years ago. I had what I called my confidence journal. And what happened was I was in meetings, and it was mostly with the men in our organization. And we were talking about a project or a product. I mean, it doesn't matter. It was whatever meeting we were talking about. And let's say it was like, you know, I don't know, we should order more green paper. And I was like, well, actually, I think we should order more pink because we use pink more often. And they're like, no, we should order green. Well, I'd write down in my journal, you know, like September, you know, November 13th, 2020, Casey said, you should order more pink paper. And then if something happened like later where we would come to a meeting 6 months later and they'd be like, well, we really need to order more pink paper. I'm not sure why we didn't order more pink paper. I had that in my journal and I would look back and be like, Case, you were right. Like, don't doubt yourself. You were right all along. So wow. I kept that confidence journal. So as I kind of went throughout my career, I could literally tangibly, physically see these little stupid, silly things that I'd write down that garnered that confidence that I have right now. And I think because I was able to self-build that confidence, going into situations or going into banks, knowing, you know, imposter syndrome creeps up a lot with us, and I could push it out of my head by looking at this journal or now just like seeing it in my head and know that, you know, I got this and I have the right mindset and I can do this. So that was my little trick there.
That is such a great idea. I'm sitting here, I'm mad at myself for not starting something like that 20 years ago. So if you are just starting your career, you heard it from Casey just now, start that confidence journal. That is a fantastic idea.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I got to find it and like take a picture and put it on Insta and tag you or something.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's something, it is that imposter syndrome is such a real thing. And I think that the further on you go in your career, the harder it is because, you know, there's so many things in our culture and our world that to remind us that we're not perfect, but again, progress over perfection.
Right.
And to know that we worked hard and we deserve to be where we're at.
Thank you, Natalie. Amen. And that, I mean, even when Patrick and Steve approached me and were like, hey, we think you'd be perfect. We're coming up with this role for you. We think you'd be perfect for it. I still sat there and was like, I'm not sure. They created a role for me and I was arguing with them.
And you should get me a role.
Like, that is the most imposter syndrome. I don't know, but that I was able to think about the journal and think about all my experiences and think that they're, you know, smart people that I really respect around me. And if they think that this is good for me, and I did, you know, I did think it was good for me. You have to force that imposter out that I thought, you know, get out of there. I am the right pick for this. And this is something I can do. This is something that I feel like I can succeed at and that I have the skills from building that confidence and getting to really connect with other bankers when we were in person. And when, you know, being a correspondent banker, I was so lucky that I worked for a correspondent bank, but I worked with all other banks. So right. I really was in other banks every day. So I think that relationship building and understanding best practices from literally hundreds of banks throughout the South and the Northeast added to the confidence and the skills I have now to be in this role.
Of course. You deserve to be here, Casey.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know what? We could chat for hours, I think. And I think we'll have to continue this conversation still because there's a lot of cool things happening with Quantic Bank. I've really enjoyed keeping up with you guys. It seems like every time I look at either LinkedIn or Twitter, I'm seeing something from your bank or from Patrick or something out there. So you guys are everywhere. Listeners, if you haven't heard of them, go look them up. Go look up Casey. I just can't wait to see what you do with this role. And you've inspired me to keep a confidence journal. That's my takeaway from today.
Fantastic. I hope everybody does. And actually, can I tell you something, Natalie? You're the first person I've ever told about that.
Oh, I feel...
Yeah,
I feel so
I've never had it. Now. Well, now,
maybe listeners
too.
Heard it too. Our other two listeners, my two listeners.
Allison Twigs, are you out there?
Yes, Yes. Yes. I know she'll hear it. She would be an advocate for that for sure. Absolutely.
I love it.
Well, Casey, it's been such a delight to have you. I can't wait to see what all you do with this role, and I'll certainly be keeping up. And all of you, I encourage you to do that as well. Casey, tell us how that they can reach you or to follow you.
Yes, absolutely. On LinkedIn, Casey Christopher, C-A-S-E-Y, Christopher, and then also cchristopher@quanticbank.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time.
Be sure to subscribe to the Girl Banker podcast so that you don't miss an episode, and follow me on Instagram @thegirlbanker. The views and opinions expressed in the Girl Banker podcast are those of the individual participants and do not reflect the official policy or position of any financial institution or agency. It is produced by Natalie Bartholomew and Bobby Hudspeth.